Hi, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Judy Nathans.
And I'm Robert Winters.
And we've been all over the map.
That's right. It all
comes back to elections.
Cruising the country.
Yeah.
Right. But let's take it right back locally here.
Back locally, just for some visuals.
Just a bit here, because Judy went on a field trip.
Right. I went on a field trip
research mission.
Right. That DPW had for the, interested parties, the Greater Lawrence Sanitary District, which is where our food waste is going. And
yes.
There was a good meeting, October 9th, a committee meeting to focus on zero waste. And there were several speakers talking about our composting, which is really anaerobic digestion, and some of the issues raised by, well, is it really, it's mixed with sewer, whatever. So anyway, there was a tour. I went on it. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of photos, but we can show.
We can do a little bit here.
And the first thing you should know is that, the Greater Lawrence Wastewater Treatment Facility, if you're familiar with Deer Island, which has eggshells, this is in the ground. So this is in ground.
Yeah,
it's a different way.
They look like big eggs you see on the skyline. Yeah, so they're actually what they call secondary digesters.
Right. So these are underground, and it's a different... Anyway, so we can't enlarge this, but if you see this, we're here. This is the tube, and back here the sign says food waste, and I can't read the rest of it. But anyway, when our tankers come from the place... in Charlestown, which is where our food scraps go, which is run by waste management.
They grind
right.
it up and make a slurry out of that?
Yeah, it's the way I'd like to tell people, think of a giant garbage disposal.
Right.
Because the stuff then, first it gets, kind of separated into small bits, and then it gets fed into this giant garbage disposal.
Right.
And in a tanker.
And it's trucked up to here.
Yeah, I think only once a week. And then this tube connects to the tanker and it goes down below here. But
right.
Anyway, this next photo, this is actually back at this is what's in that tube.
Good.
I know, it looks like a kale smoothie actually.
Doesn't it?
It
yeah.
does, because I have seen kale smoothies.
I'll pass, thank you very much. Right?
I know.
Right?
So this is what comes out of that.
The fact
yeah.
that he's got it in that container that looks like it came
It's a wearing blender.
Like a blender.
I know. I think they
right?
purposely did that.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
So let me see what I this is just for my iPhone. They're not very good. I'm sure that. All right. Now, this is actually at the Greater Lawrence facility. This is in
so
the plant.
This is down under, yeah.
And this man is Jamie Ecker, who is the basically runs the waste management part of this at Save That Stuff. He's hired by Waste Management. He's excellent. And he came with us to the tour of the greater, and explaining the different things. And so it was just great.
So
I love machines. I love equipment.
Yeah. I love going on these tours myself.
Yeah.
So they do is digestion and then
they
the
do digestion and then they also all these things and then
so the products are the extract.
Right. And then the sludge part, which I know is because they are getting this from the communities around Greater Lawrence. Okay.
Right.
This is sewer sludge, whatever, and the big argument was about, well, wait a minute, this is being made into something that isn't good for the, for soils, which is, but this is, okay, this is the byproduct. Let me explain. So there's energy produced from all of this, and the food waste actually adds to the richness of this energy, and that powers this plant, and eventually they hope to then take off some of their excess energy produced and to the grid.
Yeah.
Okay, so this product here, these are the pellets. This was the point of contention at the hearing.
So it's a combination. It's derived
this is
from
basically
combination
from
of sewage sludge and
yeah, waste. But this is basically the leftover. Obviously, it's it's a class A. What did we call it? I think I mentioned to you. It's a class A It meets Class A standards for federal
right.
Biosolids. And this is sold to landscapers and to local farms.
Right. So when you pelletize, I remember for a time when MWRA
this
was...
dried at very high temperatures
right.
to get that.
So
yeah.
they produce a pelletized product.
Who does?
It was actually out of MWRA when it goes through the sludge, but the thing is...
It's similar to what's
Deer
Island.
It was being bagged and sold
yes.
under the name, I don't know what it's called these days, but we call it Bay State Organic.
Exactly. I think that
right.
still is.
The problem with that was that there were some more than trace amount of contaminant because of bad connections into the sewer system. So the NWA was very aggressively trying to identify.
Do you know when that was?
Industrial. This was 20-some years ago.
Oh, my God. Wait, they were selling that 20 years ago?
Yeah, I don't know how many customers they had, but they gave me like about 10 sacks of it.
Oh, geez. Because they don't... See, Deer Island would have been a great place for us to go.
Right.
But Winthrop did not want more trucks going to their facility because they have an extra digester. And that's what the state wanted because that would be a great solution for Boston to expand organic recovery. But that's still kind of in the works. But this, because this product is mixed with the food waste, it's richer, richer nutrients. So I don't know. I was, if people are more interested in this, they should look at that committee report. It's got all the attachments from October 9th on the city council website. But
I would just speak more generally and just say that, you know, back when I was the Cambridge Recycling Hotline back in the early days.
When you were the compost man.
I was the compost man, long before all of this stuff. And the thing is that there are a lot of people who feel good about putting out things in a blue bin or a toter or now a green container.
Yeah.
But it's really a good idea to actually educate yourself a little bit about
the whole process. Also, look at the life cycle of these things.
Right.
Just because something says it's biodegradable doesn't mean it's going to biodegrade or it's compostable. That's the big...
thing is, I think we have systems in place that are okay, but there probably are some improvements that could happen. Industries have to be developed to find end markets for the product, but
that's right.
But that, I mean, that would be the ultimate sort of...
The bottom line is that we live in an urban area and that this is the best way to get it out of the waste stream versus it would be great to if there was enough farms that we could get to without using a lot of energy to get it to where it can be compost. But there's problems at those places too.
Sure.
Stuff doesn't always break down.
Right.
And
so this is on the organic side, which is sort of the new kid on the block for Cambridge.
Anaerobic digestion.
But the thing is that, you know, we're still recycling the glass and the aluminum and the steel and the paper.
Right,
and,
but not, but that's also, there was Amy Perlmutter, who I think I mentioned this last time, spoke at that hearing too, and that there are new restrictions because of China not taking our stuff.
Right.
So we are really focusing on, please don't put plastic bags in, don't put hangers, don't put this stuff. And there'll be probably some other things you shouldn't be putting in, but they haven't told us that yet.
Yeah, well, it's evolving. But the thing is, ultimately, I think, you know, if you're, you know, being a good citizen is not only putting material in it, but also educating yourself as to what actually happens. Because it's not just a matter of, is it recycled, is it being recycled well?
Right, so, and not all things, are...
Right, so if it's just the lowest possible end market use... Yeah. Maybe we can do a little bit better, but that's not something we have a lot of control over.
Basically, the industry just likes the ones and twos, to be truthful, cardboard. But
aluminum is always good.
Aluminum tin,
Glass.
Glass is questionable, although one glass factory that we had closed down. But other things are, and you know what's good about all this is that there's some mills that are reopening.
That's right.
We're starting pulp mills.
Yeah.
To so that we can,
you know, there's
which is what we should have been doing all along.
Right. So there's a place for entrepreneurs to sort of come up with better
and especially
solutions.
Around here.
And I think I said maybe in a previous show, I said, so you MIT students.
Are you kidding? They're doing so much.
Yes.
Really.
So I want you folks, this is your homework assignment. I want you to go out there and save the world.
There is.
To make things right.
They are.
So.
Okay. So let's get back to other Cambridge related things.
Again, as we were saying earlier in the last half hour, you know, come November, it's a funny thing. Once one election passes, then people start actually focusing on other things that are actually election related. So I wasn't being contacted particularly about ranked choice voting and proportional representation, even though, believe me, I get called all the time. I'm
you
like
went
the
from
guy
Mr. Compost Man to
elections guy, right? But it was kind of interesting how in like this rapid week, so I have one person, a mutual friend of ours actually with a Fair Vote, who's also working with
Howie.
The Voter Choice Massachusetts, who are promoting ranked choice voting.
Right.
So we met over the weekend, just trying to work up some good, clear information about Cambridge, which will be hopefully useful for the municipal election next year, but also just as, you know, because people, when they're trying to promote this statewide, a lot of eyes go back to Cambridge and say, wait, isn't that system they're using in Cambridge?
Yeah.
And it's
so that's what he's trying to do.
Yeah,
because,
we're trying to have to give the good facts about it, right? So I also then got a call from a Harvard Crimson reporter who interviewed me yesterday about ranked choice voting.
Oh, really? When is that going to be in the article?
Probably within a day or two.
Okay.
And there was a group of youngsters at Harvard who actually are promoting an alternative voting system. They actually are implementing it for Harvard student government elections.
Oh, you mentioned this on your
website.
What was that about? Yeah.
Right. So it's what they call a modified board account, but it also uses ranked choice ballots. So so then they said, well, we're going to have a forum next Monday at the Democracy Center, which is 45 Mount Auburn Street. And they said, we'd like you to be a panelist.
Oh, so that's separate from the Friday thing.
Separate from the Friday thing. So I'm also doing a seminar talk at MIT on this will be part of the topic here. So, man, when it rains, it pours.
Well, the Friday thing is just for MIT students?
It's for our students, actually, our specific students in the program I work in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, basically about civics and political involvement.
Oh, all right. Okay.
You know, it's a bit of a rather...
But the Monday thing, is that open to the public?
Yes, it is.
Is that on your website?
Not yet, but I'll probably put something in there.
So it's Monday, but there's a city council meeting.
Monday, right. And just so you know, what we're talking about here is there was, you know, Cambridge uses what they call single transferable vote proportional representation for its city council and school committee elections, and they've been using it since 1941. And it's the one city in the country who's used it continuously for 80 years. We're coming up on the 80th year.
We are the only city in the country that's continuously used it.
There were places like New York City used it. A lot of cities.
Why don't we make more of a thing of that?
Well, you know, the thing is in various places where it was utilized, it was pushed away because, like in New York City, two communists were elected to the to
so
their
people
city
didn't
council.
Like it because it was too fair.
Yeah, and the great right. Well, you're talking about New York City during the rise of the labor unions.
Oh, right.
You know, urban situation, depression. People were out of work, you know, so there were, you know, it wasn't at all surprising that 2 out of 13 people elected hard left.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's how it was. But then, so that led to, you know, people trying to get rid of the system. And then some years later, it was, in fact, they tossed it in New York City. But the, you know, the funny thing was, is that by the time they tossed, there were no more communists on the city council. It was a very passing thing. But didn't matter. The rhetoric was all out there. Anyway, so they lost it. Cleveland, Ohio, Cincinnati, Ohio, several places in Colorado used it.
Wow.
Several places. I think
Santa
Monica,
don't they?
No.
But nobody in California?
There were actually 13 cities and towns in cities, really, in Massachusetts that used it or adopted it. And then one by one, they all kind of went away. And eventually the state legislature said no more. But Cambridge has been grandfathered in. And, you know, and that might have been the end of the story. We would have just been this one lonely little place sort of holding on, you know.
Yeah.
But then what happened, actually, I think it really perked up in the 1990s, and then the Bush-Gore controversy got everybody thinking about voting methods and voting machines and whatever. And then there was a revival of people's interest in voting with ranked choice ballot, where you rank your candidates.
So if your candidate didn't get in, those votes, though, could go to your second candidate.
Well, see,
like you would rank your candidates instead of just choosing one,
Right. Now, the thing is, in Cambridge, it's transferable votes. So,
what?
You know, so if your number one choice doesn't get elected, that ballot could then go to the second choice, et cetera.
But wouldn't that only apply to primaries, really, where you might have more than two candidates running?
Well, the thing is that there's a difference between using ranked choice ballots to elect one person.
Right.
Once upon a time, people were calling that instant runoff voting, IRB. And in most of the implementations that are being promoted, both in Massachusetts and elsewhere, that's what they're talking about, is ranked choice voting. In the state of Maine, right now,
they just had an election.
Yep. Actually, right now they're using this for everything but the governor's race.
Right.
But that's a whole other story.
Yeah.
And there is actually the second House district in Maine where Bruce Poliquin has 46.2%, Jared Golden has 45.5%, and then there's a couple other candidates with 5.8% and 2.4%.
Oh, you have it right here. Yeah.
Yeah. So the thing is that...
So what's going to happen there?
Because the voters did the people's veto, and to approve and maintain ranked choice voting in Maine, a lot of eyes are now looking to Maine because right now, as we speak, they're taking the ballots from those candidates that lost and they're transferring them to secondary preferences, very similar to the way we do it in Cambridge.
Oh, I see. So.
And then they're going to eliminate.
What's the voter difference? There's only like a 2,000 something difference between the two top two, right?
But there's one candidate with 5.8% of the ballots, and the other one with 2.4%. Those together, it's like 8%.
All right, but I'm confused.
That could flip it from.
All right, but I'm confused, Robert. Do you mean, but when people voted, they only voted for one person, though, right?
They voted for, no, it's a ranked choice ballot.
Oh, so they actually had to list their preferences.
Yeah. So they listed their preferences.
Okay, so that makes sense to me. Okay.
So there are on those Bond and Hoare.
Those are going to be redistributed.
Those will be redistributed to secondary
preferences.
Based
on whoever they put. Okay.
And then the relatively narrow margin of, it's only a couple of thousand votes between Poliquin and Golden could be preserved, could widen, or it could go the other way.
So when will that be done?
It's
do
happening
you know?
Right now. I don't know. I actually been checking the internets to go and see how that's heading.
Uh-huh.
And the thing is already, Poliquin, who's currently ahead, if it was a plurality election, he'd be elected.
Now, he's an incumbent. Do you know how long he has served?
No, I don't. But the thing is already he's saying, well, if this was any kind of real election, this would all be over and I'd be elected.
At 46%? I don't think so.
I know, but see, that's the thing is that if you're ahead in a plurality sense, then you hate ranked choice voting if you think it might actually overturn.
See, this is so much more fair because people
so
have
more
of a say in who gets to be there. You have more of a choice.
Right, so it's now leading to editorials and opinion pieces in the New York Times and all across the country where people say, this is pretty good.
It's actually been going on for a while, but now it's really hot news,
right? And now, I think it was in New York Times, was it yesterday or the day before, there was even an editorial that said, we ought to change the way we do Congress to have multi-member districts elected using ranked choice balloting.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty radical idea.
How about the Electoral College?
Well, that's another issue.
That, to me, is the real bugaboo.
Right. But that's in the
how
election.
How about having
that's
two senators for a state
election.
That has less than 500,000 people? Come on.
It's the great compromise.
So then you have to fraction. Two of those states do it. They divide their electoral votes. That would be a help.
I think it's Maine and...
Maine and Colorado.
Is it Colorado?
Somebody.
I thought it was Nebraska or something.
One of those.
But anyway, I do get a kick out of the fact that elections come, people get either angry or happy on the election outcomes, but then they stop talking about the mechanics of actually how elections
happen. I don't think they're stopping talking about this one because people are talking about why aren't we have uniform voting methods, like we have these machines that don't have paper backups.
But I'll give one example is after the Republican nomination for president in 2016 where the candidate with the highest unfavorability ratings was the nominee.
Yeah.
So then Mr. Woo! Trump was elected ultimately. But the thing is, as soon as the election was over, how many people continued to talk about the mechanics of how
true.
The nomination process happens?
Well, he was so overwhelming
like
that's all you could talk about.
Right. But the thing is,
how did this
as
happen?
A country, I think it's something we need to talk about is thinking through about the machinery that actually elects people or brings up nominees. Even bigger question is, where are the statesmen, right? Why aren't the best people even choosing to become candidates in some settings?
Well, I think this year we did have some. I mean,
there was
a real movement by Democrats, somebody that got some really great. Do you know that six of the women that are in Congress are veterans?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was pretty. Amazing. That's good politics because that means you're going to have
work.
An appeal going to cross some of the usual party distinctions, right? You don't want to have a candidate who is so easily kind of categorized, he or she is just a hard left, this or that. You know, if the person happens to be a veteran, then a lot of veterans will say, but she's okay.
Yes.
You know, and that's kind of how you win elections.
Yeah.
You know, just appealing to the zealots on one side or the other is not always the best way to do it. So anyway, just to bring it back locally here, so there's these few folks up in Harvard are going to change their system. They're actually doing it for their student government elections. So they invited me to be a panelist next week about this. So I said, well, let me go do a little homework here, right? Because my understanding is that they would love to actually take it on the road and try and propose a change for how Cambridge does its elections.
Well, why do we need to change?
I don't think we do need to change. But the thing is, this is their desire, not mine.
How would it be different?
Well, okay, so we have transferable votes. Their system doesn't have any transferable votes. Their system is basically a scoring system, which I'm not even sure if it's constitutional.
Okay.
Let me be clear about that. But they have some law professor who's going to be one of the panelists, so we'll ask him, right? But their system basically involves a sort of a, it's sort of like the way you choose the most valuable player award or something like that. Where
people vote on them?
Right, so if you get a number one vote, it counts for 1 point.
Yeah.
And if you get a number two, their system says that counts for a half a point.
Oh, okay. So they're dividing the vote
in
some way.
And then a quarter, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, that sounds complicated.
It's very easy to tabulate, though.
True.
Right? And it's certainly independent of ballot order, which is one of the bugaboos about Cambridge's system.
Oh, good point.
We have that little annoyance about it.
Right. You have to keep changing that. Yeah.
Right. So the thing, anyway, so they have this notion that they want to do it for Cambridge elections. So what I actually did, I don't know that we need to necessarily show all of it here, but I actually ran the numbers. I actually took the ballot data because I am the keeper of the data.
Where would that be? Just
actually, you can grab, yeah, that one would work.
This one?
Yeah, sure. All right, so what I did was I did a comparison of Cambridge's system and the proposal that the Harvard kids are proposing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so basically, I took the 2009, 11, 13, 15, 2017 city council. I also did it for school committee races, just to see if there would have been the same people elected.
So using this system that they just told you?
I did a little bit of both. So actually, let me just show you here. So, for
what
example,
is this
in 2009,
now? Okay.
Right? What you see there in the first column next to all the candidates' names is their system, the scores they would get. So this is
the alternative system.
Right. So this is ranked in order, in their order of scoring. The next column shows the number of number one votes.
That they actually got.
Right. So if we were a plurality election, then you would get different winners based on that.
Right.
By the way, this was the election where Marjorie Decker was a write-in candidate.
Ah.
Okay. So then so I have here in the third column is their ranking by number one votes.
Yeah.
The next column is the order in which they were elected under Cambridge's rules.
Okay.
And then on the far column is just the ranking according to the Harvard scheme. Right?
So there's a change.
There is a change.
So what's the change? I'm not quite sure.
What you see here in this election here, this is the one where Larry Ward ran as a he had been there as a vacancy refill, so he was now an incumbent running. So under the Harvard system, Larry wins, right?
Huh.
But Leland Chung, who was the new bright star who squeaked in that year,
he's out.
He doesn't even finish in the top 10.
Now that's interesting.
Right. So from this, and I could show it, it's actually borne out in some of the other years
as well. Which kind of corresponds that he got the least amount of number one votes.
Right,
somehow.
But the thing is that I'll show you in the 2013 election, a similar phenomenon happens here. So based on this, I looked at that. I said, what is it, you know, so obviously if it was based on, are minority candidates favored or disfavored?
Yeah.
It's not so clear.
Okay.
But what is, I think, I can say is that incumbents are favored under their system. So Larry was already on the council, so he had that election name recognition.
Favored. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
Whereas the challengers were disfavored. So let's click over to the next one.
Well, is it down
below? Just scroll down. Yeah,
scroll
down to 2011. All right.
Okay.
Now here's an election where, in fact, the same people are elected. Right. Okay. I mean, there's a little bit of change in order. So in fact, there was no real change. Okay.
Right.
So you could argue, if you switch to this scoring system versus our Cambridge's PR system, it would be the same, right?
Yeah.
So let's go to 2013, which I think is actually quite telling. So in 2013, now this is the election in which both Ken Reeves and Minka von Busekom lost.
They did?
In
2013?
Yes. In favor of Nadeem Mazin and Dennis Carlone. Now, under the Harvard system, incumbents Minka von Busekom and Ken Reeves win.
Yeah.
And the newcomers, Mazin and Carlone, are out.
So I don't think their system's good then. It doesn't favors incumbents?
I mean, I think I will make the case that if there's one measurable thing, because one of the things you got to understand when you try and modify an election system is that for the most part, you're going to get the same people elected.
Right.
Except in the margins, but the margins are important.
Yeah.
Right? So like the last two or three people elected. That's really where the balance of power and whatever mm-hmm. is often determined, right?
Yeah.
So let's go to 2015 city council election, right? And here we also have a change. In this one here, under their system, Dennis Carlone is out, even though he was the ninth person elected. And Dennis Benzan, who was an incumbent, retains yeah. his seat.
Interesting.
All right? So that's a change. And now let's go to the very last one.
This is the latest one, the last one.
So in 2017...
You had a lot of empty seats. I mean, not empty, you had vacant seats.
Right. But now in 2017, we end up actually having exactly the same nine people elected. So, I mean, we'll see what happens at this point.
What do you mean exactly the same? There's four new people.
No, right. But the thing is, the Harvard kids system and Cambridge's system elected the same nine people.
Well, maybe because those open seats.
Because they were open seats.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, you end up with
the rank is a little different.
It's like a little different.
Dennis comes in eight with our system, and he comes in sixth. And who comes in eighth? Tim Toomey. Well, that's interesting.
Toomey by
and
theirs.
Kelly is the last.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's just switching around there.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'll say,
no time to actually show it here right now, but it's actually on the info page here.
Yeah.
I actually did it for school committee, and there was one election where Richard Harding was not only elected in our count, and he was actually the second person elected out of six members of the school committee.
Which year was that?
I think it's either 2009 or 2011. But in that one, I don't know if we have time for it, but you can try it. But the thing is in that one, even though he's the second person elected in the Cambridge system, under the Harvard system, he's not elected at all.
Wow.
So that's a really radical change. So anyway...
Oh, yeah, Richard Harding. There it is.
Yeah. So anyway,
I'm
loaded for bear for the forum on Monday. Here,
yeah. Are you bringing your ammunition here?
I'm bringing my ammunition.
Okay, cool.
And I'm not doing it to be a jerk.
So this is next Monday.
It's this coming Monday.
So you're not going to go to the city council meeting. And
I might have something else
to do. So I'll watch it on Tuesday so we can sort of comment on it.
Yeah.
All right.
But anyway, so, you know, we're back in season again. We'll be talking PR and STV and everything for quite a while to come.
Okay.
So anyway, see you next week.
Is it Thanksgiving yet? No, next week.
Yeah, okay. I'm Cambridge Inside Out.
Bye.